Rabbi Sai. So we're coming on now to discuss the question of people who live in high-rise blocks, and there are a lot of other halachas which come into it anyway. So we said that the Mishnah says that if the Mishnah says about a sukkah, and the Gemara says about the Chanukah menorah, that if it's lamalo me'esrim amma, if it's 20 amas higher than the Rosh Hasharabim outside, then it's possible. And all the Mephoshim say that it is the height of the actual flames, nothing to do with the base of the menorah or the branches of the menorah, it's the height of the actual flames from the level of the Rosh Hasharabim, the floor. And they say quite clearly, it's brought down, the Midrasha brings it down, and other places I've seen it, that we don't measure from the height of the person who's sitting on the first floor of a double-decker bus and say, okay, he's got 20 amas from there. We don't say that. We measure, and we don't measure either from the height of the eyes of the person who is standing on the Rosh Hasharabim and count the 20 amas from there. The 20 amas are counted. There's a lot of discussion about it, but the maskana is that the 20 amas are counted from the floor of the Rosh Hasharabim to the candles. Not to the candles, but to the flames. To the flames. So the flames have to be within 20 amas, and if the menorah is within 20 amas and the flames are above 20 amas, then the menorah is possible. That's as far as the Gemara is concerned. Now, what happens if, for instance, there is a building, which happens quite often, you can get especially with a block of flats, but sometimes with houses even, where the site slopes down from the Rosh Hasharabim. So Rosh Hasharabim is actually higher than the base of the house. You could get sometimes big blocks of flats which are they've got their own level, and the base of the flats, the bottom of the flats, is below the level of the Rosh Hasharabim. And it could even be that one or two of the levels, or the floors of the actual flats, are below the level of the Rosh Hasharabim, and the Rosh Hasharabim outside is at the height of the first floor, etc. Then the halacha is Rosh Hasharabim for this purpose, let's say the pavement. Okay, the pavement of the street outside is there, but the building starts down there. The building is in the lower level, right? Even in a regular house, if you've got a decent front garden, you could have a slope down from the pavement down to the front, down to the front door. Yeah, down to the front door. My front garden slopes downwards. Yeah, maybe I lose a half a meter between the pavement and the floor of my the ground floor level of the house. So then you count from the level of the Rosh Hasharabim, not from the base of the house. You don't measure from the base of the house or from the base of the building, but you reckon from. So let's say if the base of the building is 15 feet below the pavement level, then you've got 15 feet plus 20 amas.
When are you lighting then? You're lighting on the ground, on the floor?
Oh, so the question is then, once you're in a building, yeah, which is multiple occupancy, you've got many, many flats, yeah, where are you going to light? Okay?
Can you light under the Shasarabim?
Ah, so can you light below the level of the Shasarabim? You've got a basement flat. You've got a basement flat, and the basement flat is below the level of the pavement outside. Then the halacha is, that in the same way as we look 20 amas upwards, we count from the Rosh Hasharabim upwards 20 amas, we also count from the Rosh Hasharabim downwards 20 amas. And where's the raya for that? Where do we know that from?
The Gemara says by United Sedra. Between two.
This week's Sedra.
This week's Sedra?
In the pit.
Yes, that they threw Yosef into the pit. Yeah, he said, let's save. Reuven said, Vayatzi Leo Miyodom. And he said, let's throw him in the pit. And Chazal say they threw him into a pit where Mayim ain't boy, but Nechoshim va'akravim yesh boy. If there were Nechoshim va'akravim in the pit, then in which way are you going to save his life? Reuven said, let's save his life. Let's not kill him, but we're going to throw him into a pit. If we throw him into a pit, yeah, says the Gemara in Shabbos, in the sugya of Ner Chanukah, says the Gemara, that the pit was 20 amas deep. And once you get below 20 amas, you don't know what's going on at the bottom, because lo sholta be'eno. So you can see that the halacha is that lo sholta be'eno applies downwards as well as upwards. Therefore, any flats or any windows which are within 20 amas of street level, either upwards or downwards, are going to be kosher. And if it's more than 20 amas above the street, or 20 amas below the street, then it's going to be possible. Now, The Poskim Clare, we mentioned a number of times that what happens if you've got a block of flats, in Israel you can have that very easily, even here, people will light on Golders Green Road in Windsor Court. Yeah, in Windsor Court on Golders Green Road. Windsor Court's the one on the side of Kays, yeah, next door to the Kays redevelopment, yeah? The people will light on Windsor Court. Now, the people in Melvin Hall, on the other side of the road, yeah, the people who live on the other side of the road, the same side as Cocoa Bakery and whatever, yeah? The people who live there, they live in the block of flats, they can see quite easily across. In other words, you've got a Persuminissa from Windsor Court, Lechoria, to Melvin Hall. And the people who light to Melvin Hall, what about in Israel? You could have a 30-story tower block, you could have the whole of the elevation covered in menorahs. And there's another 30-story tower block right next door, yeah? And they've got a whole load of menorahs. So they're all looking one towards the other. So do we say that there is Persuminissa there? Say the Mefarshim as follows. Then the same way that we said that Persuminissa goes 20 amas down and 20 amas up, let's take from somebody standing on the pavement a 20 amas radius. In other words, if the other windows where he's looking at are within 20 amas of his building, then they declare maybe there is also horizontal Persuminissa. In the same way that it can go upwards 20 amas, we can go 20 amas down. Yeah, maybe we can go horizontal 20 amas, but nobody declares, from all the mafoshim that I've seen till now, nobody wants to declare that if the other building is... No, there is one, sorry. There's one of the mafoshim wants to say, if the other building is more than 20 amas away, most of them say, if the other building is within 20 amas, then that could be Persuminissa, beyond 20 amas, not. There are some who say, if it's a straight line, and you can see straight across, and there's a good view, then you could say maybe there could be Persuminissa horizontally, even more than 20 amas away.
Started at Torway, Northwest London, Monday, Yud Ches Kislev, 8th of December, Rabbi David Lichtig, Shlita, Parsha theme. This week's Torah sponsor, Mr. Sefur Shlema. Chol Chulei HaMishpacho, Nishmas, our esteemed founder, Reb Yosef Dov Ben, Reb Shimon, Chol Tzvi, Fitzkevitz, Zichron Lebrachel, he said. Somebody threw him in a pit.
Morning. So, as you can see on the sheet, when I was asked to speak, they asked me which topic would you like to speak to. So I say we'll do the parasha theme. There's a lot going on in these parashas. However, I came across a really eye-opening piece on Hanukkah, which I want to share. But it does say parasha theme. We're going to start off with something from the parasha, so you won't be disappointed. And then we'll move into a Hanukkah piece, which I think, you know, I'm not sure what the schedule is, but I don't think I'll be up here before Hanukkah. So this is my chance, and I think I'd very much like to share it. Let's just start off with the parasha really quickly. We are in some very, very deep and powerful parashas. In fact, this week's parasha is a transition when we move over from the Ovis into the next generation of Klal Yisrael, the Shiftei Kar, the story of Yosef. You know, last week, obviously, Yaakov was the focal point of the parasha, and Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And now we're transitioning into their children, and eventually, obviously, Shmois into Moshe, and as we go down the generations. So we find that each set, meaning the Ovos on one level and the Shiftei Kar on their level, have their own unique brachas. And even within the Shiftei Kar themselves, Yosef himself has his own specific bracha. But when it comes to the Ovos, as we saw in last week's parasha and the parashas before, there's a theme when it comes to the brachas that the Rabbeinu Shalom gives to the Ovos. And we're all very familiar. It's in parashas Vayera and in subsequent parashas, last week's parasha, that the bracha that the Rabbeinu Shalom gives the Ovos is that the children should be like the stars of the sky and the sand on the sea. Very famous. But we know that Ma'aseh is similar bonim. You know, there's relevance to these stories to us today, and everything that happens to the Ovis is really a forerunner to how Klai Yisrael is going to be experiencing. You know, for example, last week the struggle between Yaakov and the Malach of Esav, obviously it's still ongoing today with anti-Semitism and everything. So it's all the Ma'aseh of a similar bonim. So what's the message for us in Keich V'Hashmayim L'Roev G'chol Asfas Hayom? What's it telling us? What's the relevance, and what does it mean, in especially given the ban of Ma'aseh of a similar bonim? So I saw a beautiful pshat. The Nesiv HaShalom explains that stars, every single star is unique. There's no two stars which shine the same, have the same level of brilliance, and no two stars are connected to each other. You look in the sky, you see specific stars shining in their own unique way, whereas when it comes to sand, it's the exact opposite. All the grains of sand are the same, but even more, every grain of sand is essentially, doesn't really have a use. The only time that sand becomes useful is when it joins together with millions and millions of other grains of sand, and then at that point it's going to be able to stop the waves from crashing into the shore on the land. It's able to act as a barrier when there's millions and millions of grains of sand joining together. But each sand on its own, aside from being exactly the same as the next grain of sand, doesn't really, in its own intrinsic right, have a purpose or have a use. It needs to join together with all the other grains of sand. And as you said, the stars is the exact opposite. Each one is unique, and each one has its own purpose. So the Nesiv HaShalom explains that in order to be a Ben Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov, in order to be a children of the Ovis and to have this bracha be fulfilled, one has to hold on to this very unique, delicate balance of maintaining a sense of individuality. Everyone understands that just like the stars, they have their own unique purpose in this world, our own sense of self, our own characteristics, our own mission in this world. But at the same time, there needs to be a deep understanding that just like the sand only has its real use when it joins together with the millions and millions of other grains of sand. So there needs to be a deep sense of unity, while at the same time, a deep understanding that we all have our unique purpose in this world. And I actually saw a chazal, which is on... There's hundreds of thousands of letters in the Torah. Every single letter is unique, and if one letter is missing, it invalidates the Sefer Torah. Right? Every single letter is unique. And Chazal tell us that every single letter is keneged every single person in Klal Yisrael. We each have our own unique place in the Sefer Torah, and our own unique place in the... And if one is missing, the entire Sefer Torah is invalid. So to speak, if one Yid is excluded, then Klal Yisrael is not a Klal Yisrael. But at the same time, if there's two letters are touching each other, if they're joined and you can't distinguish between two letters, then it's also possible the Sefer Torah, right? So it's maintaining that unique balance between... Every letter needs to have its own individuality. It needs to be a letter on its own. Without that, the Sefer Torah is possible. And Klal Yisrael doesn't maintain its unique sense of self, sense of Klal Yisrael. But at the very same time, if any letter is missing, then Klal Yisrael is also. So again, it's the same idea of the bracha that Rebbe Shalom was giving the Ovis, and that is, there's this balance between individuality and unity, and that's what makes us the Ben Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. So it's a beautiful pshat that I saw on the parasha. So I hope I've been, so to speak, yotzer my parasha. Now moving into a thought on Chanukah, if that's okay. Chanukah is here in just a few days, and there's obviously this. I wouldn't say superficial, but there's this view of Chanukah that we look at. You know, there's miracles with the oil and the Greeks, and you know, the oil burned for 8 days, and we have and therefore that brings us to the native Chanukah. But there's something much deeper speaking to us through the Chanukah story, something much more significant, which I'm going to try and share in the few minutes that we have. And it really starts off in Bria Sa'olam. Chanukah is embedded into creation. And the Medrash tells us that in the first few words of the Torah, it says, Bereishis bara Elokim, Atah Shamayim v'Haaretz, Baruch Hu created this world. And before everything, the Medrash tells us, V'haaretz ho'isasoyu v'avoyu v'choshech al panei sahayim. Right? This land, before there was any kind of creation, it was empty, it was barren, it was dark. There was nothing there. So the Medrash tells us that these four expressions of toyu, vavoyu, v'choshech al panei sahayim, these expressions of nothingness or emptiness or darkness or lack of things, these correspond to the four goliaths that Klal Yisrael needs to go through before the Or, before the day. These four expressions speak to those four goliaths. And the Medrash says, This is the Malucha of Bavel, which we know destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and exiled Klal Yisrael. Now, Vavoyhu, the second term in the Pasuk, says the Medrash, Zu Malchus Modai. This is the Golus of Modai. V'choyshech, Zu Malchus Yovan. This is the Malchus of Yovan, the Choyshech, in the first, embedded into creation, Shehichshicha Einayim Shel Yisrael B'gzeriseha. They made dark the eyes or the personality of Klal Yisrael with their gezeres. So this darkness in the first few Pesukim in Bereishis refers to the Malucha and the Golus that Yovan brought to the table. And the last one, Al Pnei Sahoim, says the Merizu Malchus Romi. This is the Roman Empire it's bottomless, and we can speak from that today. The Golus of Rome is still ongoing, almost seems bottomless. So those are the four Golios that the Medrash speaks of. So it's clear that there's four stages that Klal Yisrael needs to go through before the Gola. So what's fascinating from this Medrash is the way the Medrash explains Yovan. It says, they made Klal Yisrael dark. They made their eyes dark with their gezeres, which is actually very interesting for a couple of reasons. Firstly, the other Goliaths that are mentioned here, such as Rome and Bavel, it's well known both historically and from the leadership perspective that these were Malchios that came in and destroyed the world. They conquered, they outlawed anything that was religious based. They were very much against everything, and they. Yovan, not so much. Yovan was actually a very enlightened nation. They were all about bringing enlightenment into the world. In fact, many of the concepts that Yovan brought to the world, we still deeply believe in today. Democracy, the very idea that the people speak in democracy, it's a Greek concept. Obviously, we know mathematics, science, many other things. These are enlightenment. These are ideas that we believe in and we buy into. And, you know, so what exactly were they doing that caused Choshech? What were they doing to darken the eyes of Klal Yisrael? But it's really more than that, because we have a Gemara that says, it's actually a Mishnah. The Mishnah starts off in Megillah. It's actually talking about Tumah and Tara. It says, "Ein bein sforim tefillin mezuzos ela shehasofim nechtavim b'chol lashen. Tefillin mezuzos ein nechtavis ela ashuris. Tefillin mezuzos." Which we know are Kisvei Kodesh, they need to be only written in Ashuris, which is the Lashon HaKodesh that we know of. Shimon ben Gamliel says, "Af besforim lo hitiru sheyichtavu elo Yevonis." Actually, it's okay to write them in Greek as well. No other language, but Yevonis is okay. So that's the Mishnah. The Gemara goes on the next page to explain. The Gemara says, "Lo hitiru sheyichtavu elo Yevonis." Amr bavo. Amr Rabbi Yochanan, halacha k'Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Halacha is taka like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that all sforim can be written actually in Greek, as opposed to Tanakam, who says only in Hebrew. Amr Rabbi Avor, Rabbi Yochanan, halacha k'Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Amr Rabbi Yochanan, my time with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Where's this coming from? How? Where does he get this heter from that Kisvei Kodesh can actually be translated or written in Greek? So the Rabbi Avor says, "Apostle Amakra yafde likim liyefes v'yishkoim ba'olei shem." It's Apostle in Bereishis. Where it says that when Akshorok is given the bracha, it says Yafta Elikim Liefes. So Rashi translates Yaft as Marchiv, to make large. Yafta Elikim Liefes, Akshorok, who enlarged Yefes, which we know is Yavon. V'yishkoim ba'alei shame, and they would sit in the alei shame. They would come to Klal Yisrael, and there's obviously things to learn from each other, right? V'yishkoim ba'alei, talking about Yavon, yishkoim ba'alei shame. So there seems to be, aside from the fact that the Torah can be written in Greek, under Shem Gamliel, there seems to be this underlying concept that there's this interaction we should be having from this pasuk with Greek, with Greece and with the Greek culture that has benefits. There should be some kind of interaction. We don't say that with any other nation. Not only that, as the Mishnah very clearly said, no other language can be translated. We can't translate the Torah into any other language besides Greek, and we should have a yish going ba'al shem. So what's going on over here? Specifically with the fact that the Medrash says, as we just explained, that the issue with Yavon is they were machshechinim soklad Yisrael. How does that tie in with yafdei l'kim liyafs, yish going ba'al shem? So this could be lies the essence of what Greece was and how it translates to Hanukkah and a message to us. So what was the issue back with the Greek Empire? So it says in Megillat Antiochus as well as many other places, and as we know today, there wasn't a blanket rule against Jewish customs or Jewish laws at the time of the story of Hanukkah. They outlawed four specific things. So if someone would approach any of us as a consultant and say, you know, we're trying to really get rid of Yiddishkeit, we're trying to have the maximum collateral damage to the Jewish people, what are the four things that you would outlaw? Bris Milah potentially, yeah, and it also goes in with the body image of Greece. So potentially, we could hear that. Shabbos maybe as well, arguable. But the last two definitely don't fall into this understanding of trying to get rid of all semblance of Jewish culture. Does anyone know what the last two are? Brichas Achodesh, the new moon, and the last one was Torah Shabbal Peh. Right, they asked them to learn. There was no Talmud Torah Shabbal Peh. So again, like we said, what was it with these four things that the Greeks saw that this is really going to undermine and really destroy? And if that's not what they were trying to do, what were they trying to do? And how do these four things tie into that? These are four things. Bris Milah and Shabbos potentially do fall in. But other than that, if we're trying to get rid of Yiddishkeit, we can think of, you know, Yom Tov, Pesach, history, regular Talmud, Torah. There's many things that we see as central to our to Yiddishkeit that the Greeks maybe could have. So what's going on with these four items, these four mitzvahs that they saw, these unique people? This is going to be the critical factor that's going to destroy Klal Yisrael. In addition, when it comes to the Chodesh and to Torah Shabbal Peh. First of all, when it comes to the Chodesh, what did Klal Yisrael do? They just made the calendar, right? So there wasn't Edim anymore. So there's a calendar. There wasn't, you know, it didn't. And the Greeks, you're not going to outlaw calendars. You know, it wasn't really something that had that much of an impact. And when it comes to Torah Shabbal Peh, you know, people are sitting and learning. It's how are you supposed to enforce? You can't learn. People are sitting. In fact, we know the story with the you know, the fable with the dreidels. They just took out the dreidels and started playing when they were talking. It's almost unenforceable to say, oh, well, we're not going to allow people to learn. You take out books, you figure out some learning. It wasn't something that... So what's going on? So to answer this, there's the Medrash, actually the same Medrash that talks about these four, the four stages of Golus that we mentioned in the beginning, brings a very famous debate between Rabbi Akiva and Turnus Rufus. The debate goes as follows. They're sitting around the table, and Turnus Rufus turns to Rabbi Akiva and he says to him, what's better, the Maaseh Elikim or Maaseh Adam? It's a famous debate. What's better, the works of HaKadosh Baruch Hu or the works of people? So Rabbi Akiva pulls out of his pocket a bunch of wheat, pulls out of his other pocket a loaf of bread. He says, Maaseh Elikim is the wheat. Can't eat that. Maaseh Adam is the bread. Obviously, the word, the Maaseh Adam is better. You can't eat the wheat. You need the man to come along. So, which is counterintuitive to what we would have thought. But then Turnus Rufus turns around and says, if that's the case, why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu create men with a Bris Milah ready? Why do you have to do something? If the work of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is better, then you should create them ready with the Bris Milah. And Rabbi Akiva turns around and says, if that's the case, then why do you even cut the umbilical cord if you think a man is created ready to go? So the normal understanding of this debate is, obviously we're not talking about theoretically whether the Maaseh of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are better than Maaseh Adam. We're trying, it's a specific concept that was being discussed over here. that became the deep point of argument between the Greek Hashkafa and the Jewish Hashkafa. And that is, this actually really started thousands of years earlier in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, the Egyptians believed that the way you were born is the way you're going to live your life, and that's the way you're going to die. Right? If you were born a paroi, you maintain that, and you died a paroi. Nothing that you did in your life either merited you to do anything or could take that away from you. And very, very specific to Klal Yisrael, if you were born a slave, you remained a slave. You died a slave. There's no way of getting out of the slave mentality. And actually, that's why they worshipped the sheep. It wasn't the sheep per se that they were worshipping. It was the sheep mentality. Sheep just follow each other with no way of getting out of the cycle. And that's what Klal Yisrael came in Mitzrayim to say. No, we are a nation of slaves, but we're here to change the world. We're going to get out. We have an impact. We can change ourselves. The fact that we were born in a specific situation, that doesn't mean that's what we're going to do the rest of our lives. We can change ourselves. We're going to become Amam Lechaz Kainim Agri Kodosh. We're here to sack you out of Machatai. We're here to change the world. We're here to create. And the fact that you were born in a specific way or in a specific set of circumstances, that's not the way you're forced to live your entire lives. That's what Klal Yisrael really came to represent, and we first see that in Mitzrayim. But that translated through the ages, and that's what the Greeks believed as well. The Greeks believed that potentially, what Tunasruvas was saying to Rabbi Kiva was, I'll even give it to you that the Rabbeinu Shem created the world. We're not having a theoretical discussion about monotheism now. I'll grant you that the Rabbeinu Shem created the world. But that the world that he created, that's the world that's going to stay. And we cannot change that. We have to watch it happen. We can be bystanders. We can be spectators. But we have no input into the world. And that became the deep point of machlokas between their two worldviews, and that's what this debate is representing. Rabbi Kiva was saying, no, we have input. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates wheat, we have to put in our effort, we have to create that wheat and make it into bread, and that's the only way the world's going to survive. Of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, but it's not a static world where everything just goes Olam Kamen Hagei Noyeg, like the Greeks and many cultures before them, the Romans and the Egyptians believed. This is a world where we, the Jewish people, or we, every person, we're here to change the world. We have a power, we're Amam Lechaz Kainim V'Goy Kodesh, and we're here to do things. Just because we're born in a specific way, it doesn't mean that's how we're supposed to continue our lives. And that's what this this debate between the Tunas Shuvas and Rabbi Kiva is really representing. And this drills down into really what Hanukkah is all about. The Greeks were saying that the way that you see the world is the way the world is always going to be, and you have no direct input. And that's why they picked these four mitzvahs. Bris Milah is obvious. The way someone is born is the way they're supposed to be. You can't change them. You can't do a Bris Milah on them. Shabbos speaks to Me'ein Olam Haba. It's the seventh day of creation that never actually happened because Adam did the Avera. But Shabbos speaks to a world that's not yet complete. If you keep Shabbos, you're buying into the concept that the world that we see it today isn't the way the world should be. We're looking at Me'ein Olam Haba. We need to change the world and bring it to a place where it's going to be a Shabbos like in this man of Bris Olam. So Shabbos also. But the most important were the last two that we're struggling with before. Kiddush HaChodesh, as we know, is a famous Gemara in Rosh Hashanah where there was Edim that came in, and Rabbi Gamliel said, yes, they're good Edim. Rabbi Yochanan disagreed, and they're not good Edim. So it was Rosh Chodesh Tishri. So when do we have Yom Kippur? So Rabbi Gamliel said, it's going to be on the 10th of the month based on my calculations. Rabbi Yochanan said, no, that's you're going to be Mechal Yom Kippur. That's actually the 9th. Rabbi Gamliel said, I'm the Rosh Bezdin. The way we decide the moon is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has delegated that to us. We actually decide. And I'm saying it's on the 10th of the month, which is that day. And you come to me on the day when you think is Yom Kippur, wearing your money belt, wearing your stick, right? It's the biggest proof that Klal Yisrael is here to engage with the God-given world and change it and make it better. And we're the ones who decide. And that's what the Greeks couldn't get behind. That's why Brachas HaChodesh is the ultimate mitzvah where the Beis Din Shel Matar is really turning the cogs. And based in Shalmalah goes along with that. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks, whenever he thinks Rosh Chodesh is, he's devolving that down to whatever. And that's our role in this world. And that's exactly what the Greeks were disagreeing with. No, you have no input into the world. You see the world, and that's how the world goes. And obviously, Teresh Baal Peh. It's the famous Gemara in Bava Metzia, where there's Tano Shel Achnoi. I'm sure people are familiar with the story in which was it Tomei, is it Toher? And the various Tanoim who were there were saying, let the walls of the Beis HaMedrash prove this, and the walls came down. Let the carob tree move, etc., etc. And what's critical about that Gemara is as the discussion got more heated, then Rebbe Lezer said, if the halacha is like me, there should be a bas kol saying that the halacha is like me. The bas kol taka came down. So what? Sorry. Exactly. What would one have thought at that point? Hey, we pack our bags, we go home. The bas kol came down and said that the halacha is like Rebbe Lezer. Bishua turns around. Amar Bishua, raglov amar loy bashamayim. He completely unfazed. I appreciate the bas kol, but we know it's on us. We're here to engage with this world. We're here to engage with the Torah. We create the pesach. And this Torah Shebal Peh, again, that's what the Greeks were saying. We're not buying into that, right? And the reason why they outlawed these four specific mitzvahs was because these four things really spoke to the fact that we have a partnership with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we're here to engage with the world and recreate the world and make the world into the way it's supposed to be. The second line of Malchus Shaddai. So what's fascinating actually is, if you think about it, Chanukah is 8 days long, like a bris milah. There's always a Shabbos in it. There's always a Rosh Chodesh in it. And it was created by Torah Shebal Peh. That's really what Chanukah is here to do, and what's here to represent. And this is what we started off with. They were machshich the einaim of Klal Yisrael to tell us that even if we're going to give it to you, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, that might be the case, but you Klal Yisrael have no input in that. You have no input. You have to take the world as it is and go along with that. And that's what that's the message of Chanukah. No. Klal Yisrael, we're here to engage with the world, engage with her, and it's really on us. And in fact, the mitzvah Brichas HaChodesh and the mitzvah Torah Shebal Peh, you bring a yid from hundreds of years ago and you show them the sforim that we have on the shelves in our basement. They would never have seen this. Where's all these sforim coming from? It's on us. We need to recreate the sforim, and in 10 years' time, there's going to be even more sforim. We need to be working. It's on us. On the people to be able to engage with the Torah from the Rabbanu Shalom and to really understand that it's on us. We're here to engage with the world and make the world a better place, and we're not here to be spectators or bystanders. And that's really the message of Chanukah. And that, again, like we said, it's all about the oral. It's all about the Torah Shebal Peh. It's all about Shabbos. It's all about the Chodesh, and it's all about the Bris Milah. Shkeach.
Yeah.
One person there.
I'm sure.
Just in 2 words or so, just explain
this. I'm a human.